meeting into order. Today is Wednesday, April 14th, 2010. The time is 9:35. We do have Representative Edgman, Olson, Tuck, my friend Peggy Wilson, and Chair, Co-Chair Newman. We have a blank CS that we need to be adopted as a working document today. Representative Olson?
I'm sorry, I wasn't...
Could you make a, or Representative Wilson?
Okay, 246.
Yes.
Yep. Okay, I move CS for House Bill 246, version S, before us as our work draft.
Thank you, Representative Wilson. Hearing and seeing no objections, version backslash S is in Samuel, has been adopted. I do have staff here to explain the bill, and then we also have the Commissioner of Fish and Game, Charlie Swatton here, my friend Charlie Swatton here also.
It's a blank CS.
Go ahead, Jim.
The Chair, my name is Jim Ellis, staff for Representative Newman. Here to present HB 246, which deals with sport fish guide licenses. What this bill does is it extends the program for a term of 2 years and also limits the fees for sport fishing operator and sport fishing operator guide licenses to $50. Key things the program does is it gathers important fisheries data through the logbook program, which can be used in management and making decisions on what fisheries may be in trouble or which ones are doing well. Through the gathering of this information, it also exempts Alaskan sport anglers from the National Saltwater Angler Registry, which require purchasing another tag in addition to a license to fish. It also provides some professional standards for sport fishing guides and guide operators. That's kind of the bill in a nutshell.
I think it's basically we're looking at the fee services, fees that the active guides pay to the department when they get their guide log books, which it helps benefit them and the department, and then the date change for a sunset date on the program?
It does. It changes the sunset, the Chair, it changes the sunset date from January 1st, 2011 to January 1st, 2013.
Thank you. Representative Wilson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We do have Representative Kawasaki here. Excuse me, Representative Wilson.
I'm just wondering, how long has this been in place? The $50, or it was $100 and then was $50. Do they have to get all three of those, or it just depends on what they do? And how long is it, I guess I'm asking, how long has it been in effect and you're reducing it because you think it's too much for them to pay?
To the Chair, to Representative Wilson, I'm not sure exactly how long these fees have been in place. I believe Commissioner Swanson could answer that question.
I can help you with that, Representative Wilson. It's been 4 years, and then this will put it in for another 2 years. And so that's the effective date, and it comes back. And it was originally requested by the department to have no sunset date. I felt it's important to make sure that expenditures, you know, through the state from the guides and stuff, that it comes through the legislature to make sure that we're actively, you know, watching what's going on and responding to the constituents that we represent. And this is an important program. The Board of Fish uses this information that they collect. And what these guide log books are, in essence, is a book. And I thank the department because they've expedited what they've done to be able to scan these and reduce some of their labor costs in doing that. But it essentially guides, if you hire a guide, take you out sport fishing, and they have a log book where they put your, and we do have Representative Guttenberg here for the record, the tributary that you're fishing on, targeted fish species, untargeted species, the tributaries that where you're at, and the dates, and it helps establish a record of fish movement in the state. And so when the Board of Fish looks at this information, they have good, credible information. We have, and so that's the reason for the books. What we do have also is a reduction from $100 to $50, and it was my response to members from the guiding association, sport fish guides, and others in the state. You know, obviously things get passed through, and they are the ones who collect this data. So they essentially were getting to pay basically $100 to collect the data for the department. So, and I see that they're, because they have a value in the resource, that's, you know, to a certain extent, okay. And I thought $50 would be more appropriate. What I also did is look back at some of the federal money that's been coming over to the department as a member of Ledge Budget and Audit, and I believe that these are, I've been told that this is all public information. It's out there, probably in LBNA, on the amount of monies that are going to the department for federal restorations and stuff like that. And it's an ongoing process that they do this. And like this year, there's a Fish and Wildlife Management assistance of $19 million. There was also a lot of extra money that came in, I believe, from the department on because people were buying a bunch of bullets this year. And anything that does with sporting goods, with some federal funds that go through that, and a little extra money that came into the department. So just trying to make sure that in a downturn in the economy, we're trying to help these guys out the best we can. And we're trying to work on to make sure that we've got mechanisms. And we did have an increase in their budget this year, too, so we're okay on that one, if that helped.
Yeah. Is there anybody from the department here?
We have the director.
Okay. Is he going to come up?
Sure. Director Swanton.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'd like to thank you for hearing the department's priority legislation this morning. This legislation is basically to lays out minimum guide standards and the data collection, which has been referenced.
Charlie, can you speak a little louder? I know you can.
The department's preference would be the Senate version, which has an amended sunset date of January 1, 2017, or the House Fisheries version, which has no sunset. Specific to the question that was asked relative to the fees, they have been in place since January 1, 2005. The sport fishing operator and business owner, that's a combo or combination license. Currently, the fee is $100, and that would be decreased to $50. If my understanding of the committee substitute is correct. So essentially, all of the fees for a guide owner, and a guide operator combo would all be $50. If this bill, in fact, passes, there is likely to be a fiscal note that will have to be constructed relative to these changes in fees. Off the top of my head, I would say that what the effect of these reductions in fees would be somewhere in the order of about $100,000 to $150,000 in decreased revenue to this program. The fiscal note that is attached to this program currently, the cost of the program is $437,600 a year. Our license, the fees that we take in from this particular licensing program generate about $240,000, and the remainder is made up with fish and game funds, which are license, resident, non-resident license fees. Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Representative Wilson and Guttenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. How many fishermen get all three of these?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wilson, there's an average of 1,647 sport fishing business licenses that are issued, and 1,882 sport fishing guide licenses that are issued on average. Those are averages from 2005 through 2009. Mr. Chairman.
Representative Wilson.
How have you been able to use the, not how have you, but I guess the data, because I know that there's never enough money in fish and game to really do what you really want to do as far as keeping an eye on everything. And over the last few years, it's been cut, and so I'm really glad to hear that it's been increased this year. I'm concerned, it looks like, that if we decrease, it's right now, it's not even paying for what the information that you're getting, and now we're going to decrease it by another $150,000. That really concerns me. I guess I just want to make that statement, but I think it would be nice if we extended this program to 2017, like the Senate has done. I don't know what the sponsors feel about that.
Representative Wilson, my concern is the fact that right now there's a lot of fisheries that are really in flux in how they're managed, and I think that things like a bill like this brings these issues back in front of us, particularly the Yukon AYK fishery. What's going on with the Chitna dipnet fishery is really important, and to bring these issues back in front of us is extremely critical, because it's so important to the people that we represent, for feeding their families and stuff. So that's when we have bills like this, it brings these up to the attention. And so I think that's important. And I know you're pretty good down in your state, actually in your area of the state, with the changes that have been done with the saltwater fisheries and the availability to take halibut in sport fisheries and reduction in that. This kind of brings those issues back up and lets us look at them, and we don't very often extend the original intent, I think, of the department was to have no sunset date. And so I just wanted to bring it back to 2 years so we can look at these, because these issues are so critical. Again, with what's going on with AYK, the Yukon River, Chitna Dipnet, Cook Inlet fisheries, pretty big issues. Really big issues. So I just want to make sure that we're aware of that and make sure that the department knows that the presence is here and that we're watching them. And I work pretty closely with Charlie on that.
Representative Wilson, follow up.
I am very concerned about decreasing the money, because if we're concerned that, and there obviously are some problems with not enough fish, all the more reason to make sure that the department has enough money to do the research that they need to do. So I can understand your date. That probably makes sense. But I really am concerned about it's $100 difference, which isn't going to make that much difference to the individual sportsman. And of course, $100 is $100, so I'm not saying that. But we all know, and I think the individual sportsmen know too, how important it is to make sure we have good data. And if we're taking money away from the department, it's going to be that much harder for them to make sure that the research that they need in all of these areas, especially since they don't have enough to do it right now. So I am concerned about that.
Representative Newman, on that point?
On that point, that's why, again, there was an increase of over about $2 million for fish and wildlife management assistance and sport fish restorations from the federal government coming to Representative Wilson.
Thank you.
That's $1.1.
Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, my first question was answered when I realized I didn't have the CS.
Do you need a copy of that?
No, I went on the hall and got one. Thank you. The sport fishing in the CS, the operator's license, and the guide license becoming a combo. How many people, I mean, it would seem to me that somebody would walk into the office and just get the combo because it's the same price as the, you know, as the, just the pepperoni. So, is everybody that's eligible to get one, eligible to get the other? Maybe that was asked already.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Guttenberg, if I understand your question correctly, the owner-operator combination of $100 would be, as a descriptor, somebody that owns the business but is also a guide. So they're out actively taking clients out on a boat and participating in that particular fishery. Okay. Whereas an owner that of the business that doesn't do that, they would just get the business license, and then they would have guides working for them that would pay the $50 guide-only fee. Mr. Chairman, I hope that helps.
Mr. Chair, yeah, well, if what I have here is the CS, the sport fishing operator license goes down to $50 from $100, and the sport fishing operator and guide combo is also only $50. That's what I was making reference to. So if you buy the two of them, you get two for one. I believe that was probably the intent of the sponsor, because that's pretty much what the CS does as compared with, well, and extends the date one more year.
I think you answered your own question. Representative Edgman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've got a couple of questions. First question would be, is that this bill only applies to commercial sports fish operators?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Edgman, that is correct.
So, it Mr. Chairman, as a follow-up.
Representative Edgman.
It doesn't apply to an individual who is a non-commercial operator, somebody who buys a sports fishing license to fish for themselves.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Edgman, that is correct.
Representative Edgman.
Mr. Chairman. Well, I don't think it's going to be a surprise to anybody that I don't support doing this. And I think that, to pay $50 or $100 really isn't a great amount. These are commercial operations. I have great familiarity with some of these out in Southwest. The well-established lodges make a tremendous amount of money. It takes a lot of money to put your business in place to get your clientele. Some of these guys have got huge Fortune 500 clientele lists. At least in the southwest part of the state, they come in. It's not uncommon in Dillingham to see five or six of these corporate jets at the end of the airport. We see them every day of the summer. The traffic through King Salmon and Dillingham. In Dillingham, you would think that the majority of the traffic through the airport was associated with commercial fishing. And I don't think anybody's actually analyzed it, but I think that the majority, myself, is from the sports fishing industry. I think to transfer this burden of a couple hundred grand over to the state general fund is not good public policy. And Mr. Chairman, I'm going to offer an amendment to keep the current fees intact. I guess I would also point out that the commercial fishing license, I had my staff do some research on what commercial fishing has to pay, and there is a fair amount that the fishermen have to pay along with being assessed for their ex-vessel value and marketing assessment and so forth. And really, without dragging us into this, this emotional argument of sports fishermen and commercial fishermen, I support the bill. It's a no-brainer to extend it. I think we all know that. I guess the last point I would make is that, it cost a couple hundred grand to get a bill through the whole process here. Why wouldn't we want to extend the renewal date out 5 years or something like that, so we don't have to come back here in 3 years, 90-day session, mucking around with pushing this bill through the process again when this program serves a good purpose. It should, the people who benefit from it should pay a small sliver of the value of it per capita, per operator. And, Mr. Chairman, when the time is appropriate, I'm going to submit amendment to bring it back to its original form.
Thank you, Representative Edgemond, but I would state that for every corporate jet in your neck of the woods, there's a motor home and a 50-horse Yamaha and a small boat with a guide in it guiding people down the Deshka and the area where we fish from. So for every corporate jet, there's someone out there where $50 and $100 does make a difference. I appreciate where you're coming from. I've been out there. I've been to those, mm-hmm. been to some of those lodges, but I've also seen the guy that's struggling around with a sign that loves the and has a passion for what he's doing as a sign by the side of the road and takes people out for the day and is a registered guide, and this would mean something. So I appreciate this doesn't warm the fuel of a jet up. I appreciate that.
Can I just offer?
Sure, sure.
But this is also deductible in terms of their business expense, and if they're self-employed, I'd rather have a $100 deduction, Mr. Chairman, than a $50 deduction and be paying into the state coffers to help a program that provides benefit to me and my family than reducing it to X amount for the sake of
we could put taxes in this and we could go real far down this road.
No, but it's a fact.
And that's true, but you've got to make money to be taxed on it, Representative Edgemond.
Well, if $50 is the difference, I don't think somebody is going to be in the business.
Right. No, that's certainly true. Representative Newman.
Just because we're, I guess, going to jump to a little bit of committee discussion here, Representative, Mr. Chair.
I think that's probably where we are.
There's some efficiencies within a department in managing this. They used to have several people that were able to, state employees that had to go through these books and transfer those. They've recently gone to an electronic version on that where they can put them into a machine and it shoots them on through. So as a person who's very concerned about other areas in the budget, what we're doing, obviously that's there, but it also affects our economy in doing that. And if there's realized efficiencies, it's a realized efficiency. And I don't know how many emails you've been getting here recently on the budget and the cost of government and how fast government's going up, but I've been getting a lot. And I'm pretty concerned about that. And so if we've got efficiencies through more expedited, and it is the department's intent to continue to even go to electronic, being able to file that electronic, and that's again why some of the sunsets on the 2 years, just to make sure that we're doing the electronic ones and more efficiencies in government. That's what it's about. And if we have efficiencies in government, passing those on to the people that are affected, to me, I don't think it's a bad thing. And I guess when we get to that, we'll discuss it further.
Representative Kawasaki, and then.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It seems like we've heard this bill a couple times. But can you, once again, Mr. Swanton, tell me, to dovetail into David, Representative Guttenberg's questions, for guided, how many guides are also owners of their own business? Is there any way to break that out?
The statistic, Mr. Chairman, Representative Kawasaki, the statistics that I cited before, and they should be in a brief that was prepared, but maybe this is taken on a life outside of the brief. But participation statistics on the back of page 2 cite that on average, about 1,647 sport fishing business licenses, which includes owner-operator combinations, have been sold. And to break that out further to just the to answer your question directly, I'd have to go back and look at some other statistics, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Kawasaki, follow up.
Sure. I guess just we're not really into committee discussion yet.
No, we're going to. I'm going to cut this short as soon as we'll get to public testimony and committee discussion if you want to.
We have a sheet dealing with the saltwater sport fishing charter trip log page. It's in the thing, and I know that we had discussed this 2 years ago, maybe, about making this an electronic form. How far has the department gotten in making that electronic?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kawasaki, one of Commissioner Lloyd's initiative several years ago was to modernize these data collection programs, one of which was the logbook program as it related to guides. The sheet that you have in front of you was our attempt at a scannable logbook sheet that we are imposing for saltwater in 2010, and we will go through the same exercise, which will be taking a look at the freshwater logbook sheets, simplifying, getting public input, and making modifications, and quite possibly having, or we're planning on having, the freshwater logbook scannable in 2011. What this essentially, what this scannable sheet does is, in operationally, what we're thinking about is that it's going to shave somewhere between what currently is taking 8 to 9 months to get data back to, whether it be public or whether it be to a regulatory agency, down to 1 to 2 weeks with these scannable logbook sheets. So the timeliness, which has been one of the criticisms with regards to this data, the timeliness of the availability of this data for regulatory agencies such as the department and others would be substantially reduced. What we can't estimate at this point in time is what sort of efficiency or cost savings scannables are going to have. Currently, what ends up happening is we have data entry clerks that enter all of the data, and there's thousands upon thousands of the logbook sheets. Somebody has characterized it as looking like a salt mine when all of these sheets are stacked up in the rooms, but that's currently the movement that we're making, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Kawasaki.
Along with the discussion about the salt mine, so basically every time a person goes out on a boat, or every time a charter operator takes a person out on a boat, they're going to have to fill one of these out. And I guess then, so if I were to take somebody out on my own personal boat, I don't have to fill out a log for, say, Kenai or Copper River or something like that. Is that true?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kawasaki, that is correct.
So I would just like to ask in the sponsor statement and both of the testimony that was provided, the push has been that there's a value in this data, but if it's only guides providing that data, I guess what's really the true value of the data for the Board of Fish?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kawasaki, we have other data collection mechanisms similar to this one for what would be just the average recreational angler, whether they are resident or a non-resident, and that is the statewide harvest survey program, which has been ongoing since 1977. We use that data in companion with the logbook data, and in some cases for some pretty intensive fisheries, such as in areas in southeast Alaska and the Kenai, we also have an on-site creel survey program to collect data. So we have multiple data collection methods such that we get complete and comprehensive coverage for the fishery statistics that we need to manage these fisheries. Mr. Chairman.
Representative Kawasaki, follow.
The mention that this data was perhaps 8 or 9 months old when it comes to when it all gets processed, 8 to 9 months is the data tracking, how far behind it is. So can you cite specific examples in which logbook data was used for Board of Fish recommendations in the last couple years since it's been in place?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kawasaki, primarily any sport fishery where there has been guided effort, whether it be in southeast, south central, or in the interior, I would wager a guess that this logbook data has been available to all of those regulatory meetings, as well as the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council, the International Pacific Halibut Commission, those being the primary regulatory agencies. I can't cite specific examples, but I am almost positive that that data has been included in the information that's been presented to the Board of Fisheries. Mr. Chairman.
think you brought up Representative Olson here.
No.
Representative Olson.
Back to the change in the pricing. I'm not making an amendment this time, but I would agree with David that we got pepperoni selling at $50 and we've got a combo selling at $100. We're not getting an accurate breakdown of what the people really want or really willing to pay for, and we're not giving the division a tool to figure out what people they have in each class. I mean, I'd be certainly amenable to 50 and 100, where the, at least we could give the division a breakdown on the classifications. But I would agree with David that if we offer them both at the same price, I mean, they'd be stupid not to go with the combo.
Question.
Do you have to have qualifications to buy? Do you have to prove that you're a guide or an owner to get a license? Or if I just walk in and say I'm a guide, do I have to take any kind of test? Or if I walk in and say I want a guide license, can I get it?
Mr. Chairman, there for an owner of a business, you need a business license and a myriad of other pieces of documentation, such as insurance and those sorts of, I guess the simple answer to the question is no, you cannot just walk right in and say I'm a guide and get a license, Mr. Chairman.
But I guess the question is if I'm a guide, I could, because I can prove I'm a guide, I've got something. But if I'm an operator, I have to have all of that other. So there is a way to distinguish if you're an owner-operator versus a guide. So maybe the additional, maybe the purpose of this is the additional cost that you have to incur to be an owner-operator versus being just an operator or just a guide with the insurance and the, all the things that you have to have. And I think the Kenai, you have to have training to be a guide on the Kenai. You have to go to college. And is that accurate?
Mr. Chairman, that's a separate program run with...
You do. I'm not making this up.
Go to college.
You want to address the question?
That particular requirement doesn't fall under the Department of Fish and Game's regulatory authority, but it's within the DNR that the guides on the Kenai are required to go through a guide college, which is about a week long.
You thought I was making it up!
And they get a degree in political science.
That's another issue we'll deal with at some point.
Hope that answers the question,
yeah.
Mr. Chairman.
But they also have to have this, they have to meet these requirements of this bill as well. So not only do they have to go to college, I know that sounds funny, guide college.
How long does it take to get your master's?
It is a... never mind. We won't go there.
50 pounds.
So I guess my point is there's other costs in some fisheries to... And if you're, anyway, that's never moved. I just wanted to point that out, that may be part of the reason why, because of the additional expense, that you don't have to pay the additional if you're an owner-operator because you've got insurance and all that stuff. Representative Kawasaki.
Two questions, actually. They're just a statement on the receipt-supported licensures, because we've gone through licenses several times. It was my understanding that the licensing agency, or maybe this is different, maybe somebody can answer, but I thought that it had to support the licensing system. So the Board of Marital Therapists that comes up today, they had to increase their fees in order to pay for the board that administers the policies. Is this different in some way? Do you know if it's different?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kawasaki, these fees are set in statute, and those would be covered under occupational licensing, so that's separate.
Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, if nobody has said it before, I want to say thank you for being patient all with what we've been doing. But I want to make an observation. We are not decoupling these fees, we are coupling them.
But if you increase the one, you might be, in fact, have unintended consequences. Representative Kawasaki, I'm sorry, Representative Newman, you were next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, in the past, we looked at different businesses licenses, and the legislature's decided that, you know, a reduction in business license, although it didn't seem very much at the time for a person, it made a difference, you know? And so I think it's been very positive effect in lowering licenses, if it can be affected, because there's efficiencies within a department. And then again, it will go more electronic. I'll just lay it flat straight out and ask the commissioner or the director. Director, I know that obviously you have to absorb less money, but you get more realized efficiencies. Would it be that drastic for you, or should we try and take other actions or reductions, or can you live with it?
Mr. Chairman, if it was probably any other time in terms of our sport fishing license sales, it might be something that we could absorb, but as you may or may not be aware, over the course of the last 2 years, due to a number of factors, we've seen non-resident license sales decrease, primarily in South Central and Southeast Alaska, to the tune of about 70,000 units or 70,000 licenses. That's been a substantial decrease in our fish and game revenue, and that fish and game revenue we use to match the sport fish restoration, which are the federal dollars that are passed through, what you referenced earlier. This particular further decrease in fees is going to be, although it may not be crippling, it certainly is going to have a major impact. Mr. Chairman.
Representative Newman, follow up or move on?
Yes, when we get there, we'll get there.
Representative Kawasaki.
Back on the logbook and the data for the Chitna fishery, and if we go dip netting, we have to report what we harvested. If you're a subsistence fish wheeler, you report it to the department. Has there been any thought that maybe this data could be collected in other ways rather than putting the burden on a charter operator? Maybe that people that fish in a certain area have to get the permits and report back the numbers.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kawasaki, if you compared the Chitna dipnet permit to the logbook sheets, they're not all that different. It's just coming from a different source. And I might add there's substantially more of them. We have investigated some more, I guess, looking at recent technology with regards to various means, electronic transfer of this information directly from the guide. But at this point in time, I don't think that the technology exists that it would be something that would not cause serious amounts of problems for us because of the size of the state and the diversity of the various business models. Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Representative Edgman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A moment ago, you referenced the guy in the RV doing sports fishing, guiding and so forth, and you know, sincerely, I respect that comment. I'm not the one here to raise taxes just sort of arbitrarily or even capriciously. But what I'd like to hear from the director more about is, you know, if you look at the bill, first page, line 10, sports fishing guide license, $50. We're going to keep that status quo under this bill. But we would of course lower sports fishing operating license and then the combination license. But what I'm curious about, Charlie, is you know, under B, sports fishing guide license, how many of those smaller operators that Chairman Johnson, Co-Chair, was referring to would be captured in that $50 category? Your best estimate.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Edgman, I believe that it probably would be a smaller fraction, but I don't have a way of calculating that without looking at some other statistics that I don't have available at this time, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Edgman, follow up.
Yeah, I'm just trying to drill down a little bit here and really understand if some of the small operators that Representative Johnson described would have to, or having to at this point, pay the $100 license under the sports fishing operating license or the combination license.
Mr. Chairman, I don't have, it might take me a minute to siphon through the papers that I do have, but I'm not sure that I have that information.
Charlie, have you considered using cruise ship taxes? I mean, it seems that the $70,000 reduction has come out of maybe our cruise ship passengers, and it's been an impact. Maybe we could use some of the tax money there to make up the budget. Is that ever, I mean, that's where the decrease has come. So I'm just, has that ever been considered to apply for some of that? It is a coastal impact.
Mr. Chairman, with regards to some of my academic training that has long since waned, one wants to keep things, it's called the law of parsimony. It's called keeping things as simple as possible. And I'm not necessarily sure that moving off into that realm would be a simple process.
I said it half in jest, but the more I think about it, if we can support a bison ranch in Anchorage, I don't know why we can't support fishing in southeast. Representative Seaton.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Sport Fish Division is charged with monitoring not only sport fish but also personal use fisheries, and I know in the Kenai River the Sport Fish Division has not had adequate resources to monitor the personal use fishery on the Kenai River. There's been almost no enumeration of the number of participants other than just by the 33,000 people that have applied for licenses. There's almost no monitoring of the catch or catch estimation done once or twice. Come down and look and see how many fish were taken out of a boat at that day, and then multiplying that low catch throughout the entire season. There's been no monitoring of the export of fish by FedEx and the incidence of that high, that reported numbers going from about 5,000 pounds a day out of the Kenai airport to over 50,000 pounds a day once the personal use fishery opens up. If we reduce funds to Sport Fish Division through reducing this license, is that going to further restrict your ability to monitor both the catch and what happens to that catch from the that growing personal use fishery on the Kenai River, and any chances to make sure that those are taken by residents instead of other participants?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Seaton, to speculate at this point in time what is and is not going to go away relative to a reduction in revenue such as this would be a little bit premature for me to say, but you know, we would have to take a hard look at a variety of things. I don't necessarily wouldn't point right directly at the personal use fishery versus other fisheries around the state. That'd be a collective division view with regards to where we might be able to make up these shortfalls. But I can tell you that some of the information that you did present with regards to the Kenai personal use fishery is somewhat simplified. I can honestly tell you that I personally spent 6 hours last summer looking at permits, checking catches, and verifying catches, verifying licenses, verifying permits in that fishery myself. And so to say that there is virtually none is a simplification of the process, Mr. Chairman.
On that point,
Representative Newman.
I can verify that because I saw him down there. Thank you.
Representative Olson.
I'll take exception with a couple of the comments. I've lived on the Kenai River for in excess of 15 years, and I've lived near it for another 15. And from my house, I can see a mile stretch of the mid-river from Poacher's Cove up to Sunken Island, and the utilization of the mid-river section in there is down considerably over what it was 15 years ago. The pressure on the river right now, I would agree with you, is, or at least a portion of what you said, is at the mouth, but it's not the total river system. I see Charlie's boats go by, I see the Parks boats go by, I know half the people on the boats. There is more enforcement on the river than there used to be. I used to go a year without seeing anybody other than the morning boat that would go down the river right about the time the guides come out. But the pressure is down on the middle portion of the river, and the enforcement is up. I don't believe it's adequate, but I think it's going in the right direction. This is probably one of the few times I've defended Charlie, but I'd like to clarify that point.
Representative Seaton,
and Mr.
on that point.
On that point, I was not talking about the middle river. I was talking about if we reduce funds to the department that has the duty to look at the lower end of the river and monitor that, which has been a burgeoning fishery, and you know, the department's own statistics will tell you how often they monitored that, and in that fishery that is very fluctuates wildly from day to day because of the it's totally dependent on the influx of fish on an incoming tide. And so my only question was, will reducing the funds that are available for sport fish to monitor their entire, all of their things, would that have an impact on, I mean, it's going to reduce the funds that are available for all monitoring, including this that needs an increased monitoring. Sorry if it was interpreted that I was saying that there was no monitoring, because I know there was some, but I know that there's a lot of time where I spend on the lower end of the river, where I'm not talking about the middle river at all and the guiding portion. I'm talking about the other sections that they're required to monitor with their funds. Thanks.
On that point,
Representative Olson.
You're talking from the bridge down to the mouth, the first 5 miles?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Representative Newman.
Mr. Chair. Charlie, was there, you know, it's kind of always been pointed toward, and certainly all obviously expectation. I know when I went to try and buy some 22 ammunition this year, you couldn't because of possibly some recent elections, that there was a tremendous amount of more money that came into the state on some Pittman Roberts money. Is that right?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Newman, that is in fact correct, but I would like to clarify that when I referenced earlier about sport fish restoration monies being pass-through monies from excise taxes on boat fuels, equipment, so on and so forth, that goes to sport fish division. The Pittman Robertson monies, whether it be firearms, and I too had problems getting ammunition here in Juneau, that goes to the wildlife side. So yes, there are increases in those funds coming to the department, but they will be going to Wildlife Division. Mr. Chairman.
Representative.
So the commissioner, though, also has the ability, because if you've got more money here to move money here, that's well within the purview of the commissioner, you know, to try and work on his overall budget. I've always kind of looked at this, which pocket you want to go for, you know. So if you go out and buy a fishing pole or hooks, stuff like that, none of that money, there's no federal money that goes towards the state on that, out of that?
Maybe I wasn't clear. Mr. Chairman, Representative Newman, that is on a national scale how the sport fish restoration monies are distributed. In other words, it's boats, it's fuel, it's fishing rods, it's hooks, it's gear, and those sorts of things. That money is distributed amongst the states through the sport fish restoration program. A similar program exists for the wildlife side. And, you know, those funds are pretty specific on the activities that can be funded with those funds. Mr. Chairman.
Just to follow up.
Representative Newman.
My response was basically going to what Representative Seaton was saying, is that overall budgets to the department money was increased overall to the Department of Fish and Game this year considerably.
Thank you. I didn't know there was a question, that was a statement. Any other questions for Charlie? With that, I think we will go to public testimony.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative.
I just want to make sure that we got a definitive statement from the director about if this bill did pass with lower fees, you know, that money's going to have to come out from another pot of money, but it's also going to have negative impacts in terms of being able to match federal dollars. You're talking a twofold purpose here, I'm surmising, but I want to hear from the director if, in fact, that's the case, and if it's not, then maybe Representative Newman's point prevails.
Is there a match that this is going to cost us?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Edgman, that is correct. To what extent, I don't know at this point in time, but yes, that money is used for match.
How much do we get? Chair, how much do we get now? And at what percentage?
Mr. Chairman, I guess off the top of my head, we're looking at somewhere, it's averaging about $16 to about $18 million in sport fish restoration monies on an annual basis, and we've been averaging $13 to $14 million in fish and game funds in terms of match. The match requirement is 75-25.
So by reducing this, how much are we going to lose federally?
Mr. Chairman, if I do the rough calculations, I mean, you could, let's say, for example, there was a loss of $150,000, then you would be looking at a loss of, or potentially a loss of, $450,000 in federal monies that could not be matched.
Through this fund. There are other, but that's the point that Representative Newman made. Okay, and that's fine. I don't want to beat that up. With that, is just Representative Newman.
Just on that point, I'm looking at the fiscal note that's attached to this, and it says match, and there's nothing there. Federal receipts, general fund match is blank on the fiscal note.
That's the original bill.
Hang on a second. Let's look at this. Original bill.
That's probably to the original bill.
Is that the original?
That's the original bill.
Doesn't matter. It's still the same money. So it's half of nothing.
I went to public school, but that still works out. Charlie, go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Newman, that is in fact correct. We do not use any federal monies as it relates to this particular program. However, if there is not fish and game, if there is not a reduction in the revenues that are taken in, then fish and game monies would have to be, our license sales monies from angler licenses would have to be used for this program, and hence that would remove them from being able to be used for a federal match. That's what I understood the conversation to be, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions? With that, we'll go to public testimony. Is there anyone online who would like to testify on this bill? There is none. Is there anyone in the audience who'd like to testify on this bill? Hearing and seeing none, we will close public testimony. Brings us to committee discussion, which I think is where we've been for a while. We will go back. Committee discussion? Comments?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Edgman.
I appreciate what the bill sponsor is attempting to do. And, you know, from a public policy standpoint, I think we come forward, we hear from both sides of the issue to the extent that we can. We weigh the testimony. We make the best decision that we can going forward. And, you know, these fees are fairly nominal to begin with. And I think the bill sponsor is going to argue vehemently with me. But I think there is merit to, and certainly when you compare to the other sectors of the fishing industry, to returning it back to its original state. And also, given the impact that it would have on the division and its ability to support the program as well as to attract federal dollars. You know, if these fees were $500, and I told the bill sponsor this, you know, that's a whole different matter. But $100 to $50, I mean, you're cutting a small fee down to an even smaller increment. So, Mr. Chairman, I'm going to do what I think is right, and I'm going to conceptually, I'd like to offer amendment number one, which would return the fee structure on page one back to its existing structure, existing rates.
Object, Mr. Chairman.
There is an objection. Hang on, let him, and just before we object, let's be clear on what we're doing with the amendment. You want to go back with on line nine, page one, line nine, under
yes.
A, you want to go to $100.
Yes, return to 100 in line 12, Mr. Chairman.
In line 12, go to $100 for both of those yes. sets of licenses.
And keep line 10 at $50.
Okay. Just before you start, I want to make sure we were talking on the record. Representative Kawasaki.
I think, Mr. Chairman, an easier way to do it would be to rescind action on adopting the CS. So you go back to the House Fisheries Bill and then amending that date.
No, we'll amend this. It's a simple amendment. It's not complicated.
Okay. Okay.
That would be one way to do it, but this has before us, and we've got a motion on the floor. And so are there objections?
Object.
There is an objection. Representative Newman, would you like to speak to your objection?
Yes, I would.
You have the floor.
You know, this is an issue that I follow very closely. Hunting, fishing is what I grew up doing. Something that I'm involved in at great extent. This is an issue that I've worked with the department with for years. And it's exactly this change CS is exactly, I did this because of what's going on in your district, Representative Edgman, and other issues around the state. And why we're trying to do this. First off, I think it's good public policy to do exactly what Representative Kawasaki referred to earlier, is trying to get more efficient in government with electronic. When I've talked to the department before about being able to file electronic, oh, geez, we just can't do that. It's just too much difficult. Well, I think, you know, I'm not very computer literate, but to have a guide be able to type in and have the department have, because each guide has a guide license number, whereas information just goes into a database and then it's instantly recorded without more public employees, I think is a good thing. How do you get that if you just keep saying, well, with what we've got is fine? We were able to try and get more to the scanning of this instead of individual logbooks, where a guide is standing in the rain, taking down every person's license number that's on his boat, every tributary that they go to, every targeted fish that they catch, every non-targeted species that they catch, go to another tributary and do it again. we were finally able to put enough, get going forward enough to try and have it, to have a scannable version where they actually take and put these in there and they're scanned and maybe reduce a little bit of labor for the department. There was a reduction in labor for the department to be able to do this instead of people individually doing this. Do you cost those savings on to the people? Do you try and look for ways to force efficiencies? Absolutely. And I'm real close to talking about some other issues. In fact, I will.
Let's try to stay on the subject of the bill, Mr. Representative Newman, but I know where you're going. Go ahead. Is it on the amendment?
Yes.
I'll take your word for it, Representative Newman.
It's a reason for the amendment.
Perfect. Proceed.
I'll borrow your copy.
You may.
You know, 2 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago, the request from the legislature, we were able to get $1 million to do a tagging and retagging and fish wheel program. We were able to get another $500,000 to do an opinion on whether on sport caught fish. The value of sport caught fish was done by a company named Southlake. When they sent the version, the draft version of that up to their department in probably September, October of 2009, I had asked for a copy of the draft, the work that was paid for by the Alaska State Legislature through a capital appropriation. So, nope, you can't have that. I said, well, it's public record. It was paid for by the public. It was not information requested by the department. It didn't come out of your budget. It came out of increased capital budgets from the legislature that we all approved. Was told, no, you can't have that. We just don't do that. That was the reason why. We just don't normally do that. So I asked legal to give an opinion on that. And I'll read it. As I understand the facts, the Alaska State Legislature appropriated $500,000 to the Alaska Department of Fish and Game for a study of the economic value of sport fish. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game issued a request for proposals, which was awarded. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game has now received the report, but does not want to disclose it because it wants to edit it to make it clearer. The report fits the definition of a public record under Alaska statute as a writing that is received by a public agency and it is preserved for its informational value. In addition, of course, the report was the subject of a specific appropriation, which strengthens its statute as a public record. The specific legislative appropriation for this report also eliminates any argument that the report is subject to the deliberative process privilege. In other words, this is public information paid for with public funds. I emailed this report to the director. When the director visited me on this bill, he told me, I asked him, did you get the email? He says, yeah, I got it. He says, but I didn't open up the attachment. So I got the paper version and handed it to the director, the commissioner, where he didn't look at it, he folded it in half and set it on the couch beside him. He said, I don't have time to read it right now. Blatantly saying, you know what, legislature? Maybe a public record, I don't want to look at it. In a discussion the other day with the commissioner, we discussed this issue again. I won't talk in depth about some of the things that were said, but I reminded the director that we are elected officials. We are the voice of the public. There is a separation of powers, the legislative branch, the administrative branch, and the judiciary. We set policy. administration administers policy. When we as legislators, particularly the person who asked for the request, as the co-chair of resources, so that I can get the information out here, and other information is requested, what has been like the fisheries on the Yukon River or the AYK or the Chitnet Dipnet fishery, and just told, well, we'll get it there. We'll get it to you. I haven't received it. I don't like that. Now, I see efficiencies that the department has done. I'm trying to pass those efficiencies on to the public. But I'm also trying to set the example that our authority as legislators is respected. That the people that we represent, their voice matters. That they do have a say in seeing what goes on with the way public funds are spent. And when it's blatantly said, well, we're just not going to give them to you. What tools do we have as legislators? And I won't get too far down that road, Mr. Chair. You know, the bottom line is the department has received a lot of extra money this year. They're not going to be substantially wounded or in a difficult situation because of this. A couple $100,000 the effect of this. But what the principle of this is being able to make sure that the public's information is protected. That's absolutely critical to me. I've got the information. If anybody wants to look at information about how the department has extra money coming in this year, they're not going to be shorted. They'll have extra money, in fact, than they did, more money than they did last year in the budget. They'll be okay. But there's a principle here too, Mr. Co-Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Richard.
And I vehemently object to the amendment and will vote no on it.
Thank you, Representative Newman, and I would like a copy of that letter to be copied and distributed and placed on the record to the members of the committee so that everyone has that since it's on the record. Is there any additional discussion
on the amendment, Mr.
Representative Edgman?
Chairman, just some respectful rebuttals, I guess, to Representative Newman's points. I guess, once again, to echo what the director said, that this bill applies to commercial operators in the sports fishing sector. It doesn't apply to non-commercial operators. I asked him two questions about that. Both times he answered unequivocally to that effect. You know, the second issue is in terms of efficiencies and the cost of running programs. I mean, we could argue there's a whole range of licenses and fees and other expenses associated with a great range of hunting and fishing and you know, all kinds of activities that we could take a look at, you know, to sort of funnel in and pick one sector of the overall industry, you know, the consumptive side of things in Alaska. Really does beg the question, why are we just addressing one small portion? And I'll say once again that these fees are pretty nominal to begin with. I mean, if they were huge fees, you know, I think I'd be right there with Representative Newman. And I guess the last point I would put across, you know, would offer is that we are, in essence, and we are not the Finance Committee, but we are in essence sort of acting above and beyond what the other body did with their version that before this committee, what the Fisheries Committee did, passing this bill onto this committee. But we are in essence applying a decrement to the Division of Sports Fishing. I mean, that, you could certainly look at it that way. And I know that can be countered in terms of efficiencies and what have you, but that money will have to come from somewhere, and it will not be there to attract federal dollars. So, you know, sometimes we we have to make difficult decisions, Mr. Chairman, I'm going to stand firm with my amendment, and if the majority will is to not support it, fine, I'll support the majority will of this committee, and so that would be my concluding remarks.
Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to, I mean, looking at the fees and looking at the industry and looking at the resources, Alaska's resources, I do believe it's nominal. I have an electrical license. I have to spend $280 to maintain that electrical license and go to 16 hours of continuing education every time I need to renew that license. It's that or take another four-hour test. And last time I took that test, man, I barely passed that, so I might just take a 16-hour class. You know, the mother of my son also has a license. She's a hairdresser. We talked to her last night discussing the, you know, she had to go to school. I had to go to school. I went through a five-year apprenticeship program to acquire that license. And when we're looking at an industry as big as we are and trying to protect, you know, one of the reasons why in having licenses, we want to protect the public. We want to protect the health when it comes to beautician's license. In this case, I think we want to protect our resources and have accurate data to know how best to do that. And so I'm not objecting to rolling back to what's already been set in place and maintaining that and then having the licenses extend for additional 2 years so we can continue acquiring data. This reporting procedure seems pretty simple. I understand the 9-month lag, but at least we're getting the information and we can track trends. So I support the amendment.
Thank you, Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to make a technical observation. In the amendment, if we delete the $50 without doing anything else, we eliminate the fee entirely. So but the intent is to go back to the original fees.
Well, my intent was to keep my mouth shut, but
that's the intent.
I understand. That is the intent to go back to the 100 and be perfectly clear. It is a conceptual amendment. So on A to go from 50 to 100, and on line 12 to go from 50 to 100. Representative Newman.
Chair, we'll give a little on this. But I would still like to say I'd like to offer an amendment to the amendment that on line 9 that stays at 50. So it addresses what Representative Guttenberg has brought forward. And so that it would say a sport fishing operator license is $50, a sport guide is 50. If you want to combine it, it's 100.
There is an amendment to the amendment. Is there discussion on the amendment to the amendment? Is there objection to the amendment to the amendment, I guess, first?
I'll object.
Representative Seaton. Representative Seaton, I'll speak to your amendment.
Yeah, thank you.
Objection to the amendment.
Mr. Chairman, I wasn't going to speak on this, but 2 years ago, the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission came forward and said that the commercial licenses were not going to keep up with the increased expenses. We went forward with a plan that, you know, and I voted for it, raised my fees from $100 to $500 on my vessel. Some vessels went up to $1,500. That's just the operator license. That's exactly what we have here. My other vessel's a little smaller. It's $250. That's no permissions or anything else. That's just the operator's license. The whole intent of the legislature was that the fees for commercial operations cover the expenses of the program. You know, personally, I think that the fees here should cover the expenses, which they do not. And that's a principle I think that we have throughout, you know, our continuation of the legislature, that for commercial operations, whether it's applications for oil and gas, things with DNR, you should collect the money to take care of permitting the programs, those operations. In fisheries, on the commercial side, that's exactly what I think we I think almost everybody voted for that. I think it was unanimous that we raise the schedule of fees for all the operators to make sure that in the future 5 or 10 years schedule of what they had, it would totally cover all the administration of that, the program. We're not covering it here. I'm not making an amendment to raise them, but I can't support putting in a unfunded mandate because it would be unfunded. They're required to do this, and we would be reducing the funds available to cover that. They would have to take it out of existing programs, and so I can't support the amendment to the amendment for that.
Additional comments on amendment to amendment number one. For clarification, amendment number one would, on line 12, raise it, okay, leave 50 on line 9 and raise to 100 on line 12. That's the amendment to the amendment. Representative Olson, did I get that wrong?
No, you got it wrong.
Okay.
Comment?
Yes, sir.
In the spirit of compromise, I think I can certainly support the amendment to the amendment.
Thank you. Is the objection maintained?
Yes.
Would the clerk call the roll?
Okay, so a roll call vote on Amendment 1 to Conceptual Amendment 1. Representative Tuck?
No.
Representative Olson?
Yes.
Representative Seaton?
No.
Representative Edgman?
No.
Representative Guttenberg?
No.
Representative Wilson?
No.
Representative Kawasaki?
Yes.
Co-Chair Newman?
Yes.
Co-Chair Johnson?
Yes.
4 yeas, 5 nays.
So amendment to amendment number one has failed. That brings the original amendment before us, which is $100 bracketed on line 9 and 12. Is there a discussion or objection to amendment number one? There, you maintain the objection, Representative Newman?
Yes.
The objection has been maintained. I don't think there's any reason to discuss this any further. Everyone clear on the amendment? I see people nodding their head. Would the clerk call the roll?
Roll call vote on conceptual amendment one. Representative Olson.
Do you want to read the amendment so I know what I'm
change all fee structure
to me that basically came back to 100 on delete the underlined and insert the bracketed basically on page one.
No.
Representative Seaton?
Yes.
Representative Edgman?
Yes.
Representative Guttenberg?
Yes.
Representative Kawasaki?
Pass.
Representative Tuck?
Yes.
Representative Wilson?
Yes.
Co-Chair Newman?
No.
Co-Chair Johnson?
No.
And back to Representative Kawasaki?
No.
Count 5 to 4.
5 yeas, 4 nays.
Amendment number one has failed. Are there additional amendments?
I'm sorry.
I apologize. The chairman has failed in failing to stop amendment number one. Amendment number one has passed. Is there additional discussion on the bill? Are there additional amendments? Hearing and seeing none, what would be the will of the committee?
Kill the bill.
Representative Wilson?
I move CS for House Bill 246, version S, out of committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal.
As amended.
CS for House Bill number 246, as amended, passes out of the House. We are adjourned. This